Hey everyone, it's Glenn here from home, depeche-mode.com, and welcome to episode 16 of Breathing in Fumes. In this episode of the podcast, my dear friend Hector J. Espinoza joins me, and we have a conversation about the Memento Mori tour kickoff in Sacramento, California. And we just have a conversation, like we're hanging out or on a phone call, talking all about the show and a little bit more. And this is it. This is your spoiler warning. There's tons of spoilers. Lots of spoilers. So if you don't want anything ruined, just turn this off. Don't listen anymore. So, but we talk about the show, hanging out before and after, a real special moment we had later in the evening, and just a whole bunch. So again, spoiler warning, there are lots of spoilers. You have been warned. Don't get mad at me because you didn't stop this. No, really, I would be mortified if I had spoiled the show for anyone, so please don't listen any further if you don't want any spoilers for the show. Well, let's get into it. This is Glenn, and you're listening to Breathing in Fumes, episode 16.
All right. Well, hey, Hector, welcome to the podcast. I got to sound official, like we, you know, hey, I'm a host.
There we go. Good to talk to you, Glenn.
Yeah. I know it's pouring rain outside, so I'm sure it's raining where you are.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah. Well, before we get into it, we're going to, you know, discuss Sacramento and the tour opener for the Memento Mori tour. But let me pick your brain, just since the record came out a few days ago, where are you at with it? What do you think of Memento Mori?
I love it. At first I was like going through it and I'm just absorbing it, you know, completely.
Right.
Because, you know, it was all new to me recently. When it come out on Friday?
Yeah.
So I've kind of been with it, you know, for a couple of days now. You know, there's really some tracks on there that I'm really in love with already.
Yeah. You know, I'm in a weird place with it because I'm listening to it differently than I normally would, because I waited. Well, obviously it came out, but it had leaked and people were listening to it. So I had a couple opportunities to hear it, but I wanted to hear it live, you know, at the show. And so after I heard Soul With Me, I was so mesmerized by it that when I got back to my hotel and I could settle down and, you know, that's the song I listened to. And I listened to it like at least 10 times in a row. And then instead of just listening it from top to bottom, I just started picking through it and going through it. And I think I've only listened to it all the way through maybe once or twice. I'm still figuring songs out. Do you do that? Or do you have a way you listen to it when a new album comes out for any band, but you know?
Yeah, no, this one was interesting because, you know, obviously Ghost Again came out first.
Right.
And then so I kind of skipped through that one. And I skipped My Cosmos Mind, which I was familiar with already because I had been listening to that one kind of over and over. And then I just kind of went through and tried to get the vibe of each one. And then I kind of honed in and focused on a few of them. And then I went through top to bottom just over and over on repeat from there.
Right. So if you had to pick a top three, are you able? Or does it keep changing on you because the songs keep evolving?
it does keep changing, like, because you kind of pick out new little nuances, you know, in each one, and then you hear like the background
Absolutely.
Vocals and everything else. So then at first listen, you can kind of say, all right, this is a good, you know, kind of more of an up-tempo dance floor type of vibe to it. These ones are the slower ones.
Yeah,
but, you know, I have gravitated to a few of them there,
so
too.
If I were to make you commit to three right now, just a couple days after the record came out, obviously it'll change. Well, if you had to go three, what would they be?
It would probably, well, my number one is probably Before We Drown is probably my number one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Second, Soul With Me. We kind of share that affinity for that one. That one,
yeah.
It's just an amazing track.
That all hit the way me through. Too. That hit me just to circle back to that one real quick, but that hit me because I'm getting a little older and my kids are growing up, and you know, it's the you know, Fleetwood Mac's landslide point in my life, you know, where I'm looking back a little now and I got to make sure I go to the doctor more. And, you know, and so, but, you know, that song made me kind of accept like, hey, you know, we're in our, I'm not yet, I'm still in the middle, but, you know, in your 50s, you start thinking about getting older. Like, I got to take care of myself. And, you know, but he made it in a weird way, you know, it could sound sad, but it was actually comforting. Like, it's okay. We're all going to get old and go. The song kind of comforted all those like kind of feelings I've been having the last little bit, you know, but just growing old. But yeah. So, okay. So Before We Drown, Soul With Me, what would you say was the third one?
This one is kind of hard. You know, I love People Are Good. My favorite Stranger has that just, you know, it's a little, it's simple, but it just has a good tempo all the way through it too. So,
right.
I kind of switch between those two. Carolyn's Monkey is just, it's interesting. It's not in my top three by any means, but that one, if I hear it, I'll hear it for the rest of the day. Just keeps repeating in my mind. I don't know what it is about that song, but there's something about that song does that to me.
I know. If I had, I'm pretty much in the same boat. If I had to pick three, I mean, Soul With Me doesn't even seem like it's a part of the album. It just seems like I have this new Depeche song that's not a part of anything. It's in its own universe. And I'm also having a pretty heavy case of Ghost Again fatigue. I absolutely love the song, but I've heard it so much that I don't know. It might be in my top three, but I'm kind of burnt on it, so I just don't even listen to it right now. I keep coming back to Don't Say You Love Me, which is kind of a different song for them, but I love that about it. And I don't know, it has. I hear people saying it's like a wannabe James Bond theme, and I hear that, but it feels like it goes back further, like an old murder mystery movie. And I mean, it's about, you know, broken love and all these whatever. I mean, that's an interpretation, but you also feel like you're kind of on the train on the Orient Express and you're in this, I don't know, at least I do. And so I just keep coming back to that one. Before We Drown, Always You, Speak To Me. Oh God, I guess you can't pick a top three right now. One thing I will say is it does seem like more of a complete album than the last four. For me, and I think what they were trying to accomplish on Spirit, they nailed here. That it wasn't overproduced, has more of an airy, I don't know. Now I'm thinking about it too much, so I'm gonna shut up. But overall, I'm really loving it, and it's gonna take me a little longer to keep absorbing it. So now this is obviously not. This will be packed with spoilers, but was there a song from it that you kind of wish they would have played live that you didn't, that they didn't?
I would say Before We Drown. I'm hoping that they bring that in before the end of the tour. You know, this tour is going to be really long, as we can tell. You know, we're yeah. I'm going back towards November, December-ish again to see them. That's my next set of tickets. I know you're going to Vegas here. What is it, tomorrow?
Tomorrow. Yeah. Tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Leave tomorrow. Yeah. And, yeah. Yeah, I could see them bringing that in, Always You. You know, the only song I don't like, well, Never Let Me Go is okay. Feels like a B-side. But Wagging Tongue, I'm just struggling with.
It's not as memorable for me either. That's funny. He said that it's not as memorable.
Yeah, there's something about the melody. Like, the music's cool, and it's, I struggle because Dave and Mark wrote it together, and it's like, what a perfect combination. But the like the vocal melody reminds me of one of those old like hippie protest songs. Like, if you're going to San Francisco, put a, I don't know the words because I don't like the song, but you know, there's just some, I don't know, I'm getting way off base, but there's something about it. But I was listening to the album earlier today when I was working, and that song came on, and I think I'm warming up to it because it was yeah, like I said, the music's great and everything. There's just something about the vocal that not Dave's performance, just the melody is just kind of throws me off. But yeah, so I'm excited. We'll get some more time, and I'm sure that this first run of shows is going to be I think they're going to change it up pretty good when they get when they roll out to the big tour, you know. So, well, let's get into the day of the show, because it was a pretty exciting day leading up to the tour opener. The fact that they did a tour opener here in Northern California was pretty crazy.
Especially Sacramento, of all places, too. I was surprised, but, you know, that was a great venue to pick.
Yeah.
Pick one.
Yeah, the last time I had been there was to see Depeche Mode. Interestingly, the crowd at the Global Spirit Tour was completely different than this one. Did you go to Sacramento? I can't remember if you were at that one. The last Global Spirit Tour date.
I did not. I had a ticket that I work kind of got in the way for that one, so I missed the Sacramento one. I had a ticket, but I didn't end up in the Sacramento one.
I don't want to get ahead of myself, but last tour, you know, the night before was San Jose, then Sacramento, and San Jose, at least in my area, was like such a dull crowd. And then I was a little worried when went to Sacramento, and, you know, and then all of a sudden it just blew the roof off. This time it was kind of the opposite. Sacramento was okay, not the greatest energy crowd. Dave couldn't get them singing along much, but San Jose was really good. So I guess there's no rhyme or reason to it, but it was just interesting how it went out. But I'm getting ahead of myself, because I it was kind of fun, you know. We were meeting some new friends from fan meetups, and there was kind of, you know, it was fun kind of getting into the day.
It probably kind of helped the liveliness of it from I was thinking about that. San Jose, it was on a Saturday, everybody was off that day, they probably had enough time to kind of do a little warm-up pre-show action before, so it probably led to a little bit of that energy.
People ready to go.
You know, I don't know if they're getting off of work, you know, in the middle of the week on Thursday in Sacramento. So that might have helped out a little bit.
Yeah. Or they didn't drink too much because they had to work Friday morning.
I didn't think about
that. That's a good point. Yeah. Maybe that's why the crowd was a little subdued. I mean, not singing along at the end of Everything Counts is unheard of at a Depeche show, but Dave couldn't get them going.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. We met up. We drove into, let's see, you know, in the middle of the afternoon, and you like you, we Elaine and I got a hotel room, and we met up at a. I felt so bad because the our friends from Depeche Collective threw a thing before, and we had to cut out to go check in and all that stuff. And it was cool to see you guys there briefly. Yeah, you guys stayed for a little while, if I remember right.
Yeah, we stayed. We probably left maybe 20, 30 minutes after you did. We hung out. Everybody was there. You know, I think they were still trickling in a little bit there, too. But it was really cool. It was a good venue. They were playing, you know, Depeche Mode on Pandora, whatever they had going on there, too.
Yeah. So
that was nice. Relaxing little venue.
Yeah, Gents put that together. And then I didn't think I was going to be able to make it because it was originally at this other place. And they wouldn't let him do it. They put some like 90-minute thing on it. And so we had reservations, you know, from at 4:30 there, because that was where it was originally planned. And we had people coming, friends from Colorado and family from Seattle area were meeting us. So we were like, man, we got to go. So, you know, we wanted to stop by and say hi, at least to be there for a little while. But it was pretty cool. Then we went and checked in, and then we went over to back to the restaurant. We checked in and met friends and ate. And then I ended up just from that point on, just running into a lot of friends. So many people traveled in. Did you have people that you weren't expecting to see, or friends from different areas come in? I know you did in San Jose, but what about Sacramento?
Yeah, I had a few people that kind of showed up. A lot of them traveled from the Valley, you know, around the Bay Area, that sort of thing there too.
Yeah.
Even around my seats, there was people from like, I want to say, I don't know if it was Sweden or somewhere, Switzerland, somewhere in Europe. They had traveled in, and they were right in my aisle too. So that was interesting to, you know, see how they were during the concert, how they, you know, it was just different. It was, everybody had a good time in that little section.
Yeah. I was glad afterwards we ran into our mutual friend, Dan, but I didn't know he was in San Jose. I saw later. I was like, oh, I would have loved to have seen him. So is he going to Vegas? I don't know. We'll have to text him and hopefully run into him there. Do you know if he's going?
Yeah, he's going.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, he's gone.
I'm gonna hit him up and meet up. So we just hung out and ate, and just the lines were crazy. The merch, I don't know how. Is there like less merch booths or something? Because the lines, I mean, they had a booth outside the venue. So like if you were walking up, I mean, you didn't even have to go to the show. There was a mountain, but the line was, I don't know, mile long. I mean,
it was really long. We were trying, and I kept walking by there. And right when they were setting up, I thought about jumping in the line right there because it wasn't that long. It seemed long, but
yeah,
turned out it wasn't. When it you know, waited 40 minutes later, and it was blocks and blocks and blocks. I was like,
I just couldn't believe the merch lines. And then inside, it was just as long. And they had like several inside. I mean, it just everyone was. It was insane. I didn't – same thing in San Jose. I guess we're kind of lumping two shows together, but we'll focus on Sacramento. But the lines might have been longer at San Jose for merch because I didn't buy anything at either shows. I'm going to go early to the Las Vegas show, stand in line. My wife and was with like her cousin and her aunt, a bunch of friends, and they went and got in line, and I was – running into people and just talking. And so I didn't even buy merch yet. I'm just going to buy it in Vegas. I was like, oh, next show.
That was the approach I took in Sacramento, where I didn't want to wait in line for 2 hours. And so I kind of bit the bullet in San Jose there, got in line, missed out on some things. They sold out in a couple of things I wanted, but it was good overall. Got a couple shirts I wanted.
I know the one shirt I really wanted. Elaine goes, which one do you want? I'm like, this one. And she texts me and she's like, that's only available as a woman's cut. I was like, oh, it was the one with like the table and chairs.
Yes, I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Yeah, I wanted that one so bad. well, let's it was just fun. I mean, I met so many people that I've known online for so long. I mean, I had local friends that I hadn't seen in years and things like that. But it was so nice to just say hi to. I mean, they had so many people met up and traveled that I met all these people that I've known online, you know, social media for so long. It's kind of surreal. It's like you feel like you know them, and then you're like, oh, hey. Hi. And then you feel I do at least. But that was really cool. A lot of the Depeche Collective crew met up, and that was really fun to meet some of them for the first time. And now I can't remember. Did you sit? Were you by yourself down on the floor for Sacramento?
Yeah, I ended up I had a few tickets. I ended up switching them out, making some moves. So I ended up in So I ended up on the floor, really good seat. It was like row P or something like that. But it was, you know, since there was a catwalk right in the middle, it felt like I was really close still. I felt pretty lucky to get that kind of in the center of it too, right on the aisle, which is helpful too, just from a space perspective.
You should tell us about your seat upgrade in San Jose real quick, because that's that's pretty unheard of.
Yeah, no, that was super bizarre.
Upgrade isn't, but what happened to you is pretty cool.
Yeah, so I had went and got some snacks. You know, I hadn't really eaten, so I went back to my seat and I was kind of sitting there, and I was, you know, I was by myself on this one as well. But I was way, you know, I was in the center, but like lower half in the back, like right above the floor.
Just to clarify, you were with a bunch of people, but your seats were separate.
No, I'm by myself all the time. Everybody was kind of spread out. You know, we kind of, you know, that's kind of how you have to do it whenever you have Ticketmaster. You know, everybody's trying to get seats. So I ended up with that seat. But as I sat down, I started hearing like popping in my seat. And then so I lifted up, lifted back down, and then it turned out the seat, the left back corner of the seat broke. So I was like, well, this is unusual. I was, you know, thinking to myself, what should I do? So I go up to the lady that was working the tickets in the aisle to making sure that you're not like stealing people's seats.
Right.
I just kind of told her about it. She got her supervisor. Long story short, they ended up saying you could wait for it to get fixed, or we could just give you another seat. I said, I'll take another seat. And, you know, I'll fine with that.
Yeah.
Ended up super close, you know, a lower half section, not on the floor, but right above it, third row. What a seat. I had looked, because I was actually debating whether or not I wanted to buy another ticket while I was there. Missed out on a second row floor seat while I was in the merch line. For some reason, that ticket was $395. Somebody got desperate, apparently. Yeah. But every other seat around there was like $2,000 to $3,000. So I put it in my cart and said, sorry, so it's been taken. So I felt pretty lucky at the end of the day to get that.
You know, it's one funny for free. It's funny, when we were out there about the same time, our friend Olivier had texted me and he was like, see, I told you. And he took a screenshot and there was like second and third row seats and the price was like about what you said in the 300 range. And I was just like, are you coming? He's like, no, he was still super jet lagged from his trip. But yeah, you know, you never know what's going to pop up day of. But I know for oh, and then they gave you a hard ticket, too.
They gave me a hard ticket. And that was, I was so excited to see that because it's been years since I've had, you know, an actual physical ticket.
A printed hard. Yeah.
So I put it in my pocket. And then, but then I had to pull it out to show the people like, hey, I'm not just jumping into a middle seat, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So I did that, had a bunch of merch in my hands, set everything down. It must have fell out of my pocket. So discovered that right after the show. You know, that's kind of a bummer, but at least you know you can get one. You just have to break your seat, I guess, to get one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do I get an upgrade? I think we just discovered a hack.
There it is.
A concert hack. So, oh, that's cool. I know for Sacramento. So I don't know. Maybe for some of our friends overseas listening, I know all the North American fans know this frustration. But so for the Sacramento show, when we were buying tickets, we bought tickets for the, you know, Sacramento, San Jose, and Las Vegas on the same day at the same time. But our priority was Sacramento, so I was doing that. And I was pulling the best seats. And every time I went to check out, I was getting the notifications, another fan got your seat, another fan got your seat. And it happened probably, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 times. And so finally, I just took whatever I could get. So I wasn't sure how great our seats were because it was kind of in the middle no man's land, and they ended up being really good seats at that weren't $10,000 like, so, you know, people were paying thousands of dollars, and so we got lucky that way because I was just like, I don't care if every other show sells out, I gotta be at the tour opener. I've never been at one. It was just, yeah, I was so pleased with how we had pretty really good seats. I wish I would have had those first couple. I think I was pulling them in the first 10 rows, something like that, and to the sides, and just kept getting smoked on the someone else got them. So I was just like, ah. So did you have any trouble with that when you were buying tickets?
I had the same experience. And then there was I think it was maybe the fifth time I tried. I had that ticket anxiety where I'm going to end up with, you know, the seat at the top. So because of that, I just started pressing buttons, and then I didn't even look to where I bought them. I just added it and it went through finally. And then I looked after the fact. That was kind of how that went. So I had that. And then I had to buy Santa's at the same time. So I jump on a different login, do that whole thing there too. So I had a couple things working out. It all turned out in the end, but. Yeah, it was. I had definitely the same experience.
That was anxiety, but nothing like the cure. Just quickly, I kept it just kept dying. I got lawn seats, and I'm just so over Ticketmaster. They got to figure this out, because every time I pull a good ticket and put it in the cart, it just timed out. Did that for Depeche. You know what? It didn't do that for Depeche. It just, every ticket was unavailable. And for the cure, you'd put it in there and then it would just sit there and load, and then it would crash and say, our fault, not yours. I'm just like, oh, man. And then to see friends in Europe and other parts of the world just going, why are you guys paying so much for Depeche Mode tickets? You know, they're over there, it's just normal, whatever. But the ticket anxiety that's my new favorite phrase, because that is real. So did you watch, we got separated, we were in different areas. Did you go, and if we were together, I don't remember because the two shows are blurring. Did you go in for Kelly Lee Owens? Because I skipped her on this one.
I did for the Sacramento one. I watched the full one because that's where I was making a decision. Do I go get in the merch line or do I watch?
Oh, yeah.
And I had listened to a couple of her tracks just going in because I didn't want to go in blind to it. And yeah.
I really enjoyed it, actually. Her performance was great by herself, and then just the atmosphere, it was kind of experimental at the same time. Her vocal was pretty strong. I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah, best tour opener in a long, long time. I actually was familiar with their music. I came across it on, like, you know, those suggested Spotify or someone. I was on someone's radio and she had tracks on it. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I went, checked it out, and she had done a couple remixes or something. I can't remember, but I was familiar with her, and I remember, like, oh, that's really cool. You know, instead of, I don't know, it just had like high energy, and so that was cool. And then what'd you think overall of the show?
Oh, I thought it was a great show. They did, what, 5 off the new album, if I'm counting, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think there. So.
It was a little different for me to hear Walking in My Shoes so early. Is that just me? Where
no.
I'm used to like an encore thing, you know, where they kind of throw that in there. But maybe I'm just used to the old shows.
I thought that was the perfect old, I hate to use the term old track, a perfect classic back catalog song to kick off after the two new ones. Yeah, that was really cool. Any song or thing kind of floor you? Because I have my jaw hit the floor thing.
Yeah, it was a Sister of Night. I think it's probably yours too, and every other band that's there.
Just, I was not expecting that. That blew me away. That was the one thing of the whole show that I just was like, no way, I cannot believe this. The full band version. Martin had done it acoustic, you know, in the past, but that was incredible. I mean, the performance was amazing. I couldn't believe how good Dave sounded. Not that I expect him to sound bad, but man, he was fired up. He looked like a guy ready to go. And it was funny, and I mentioned this. I did a review of the show for my friend David's Almost Predictable Almost blog. He's been on the podcast several times, David McElroy. And I wrote in it that it was funny to watch the TV performances because Dave's so toned down, and he just kind of – and you see him kind of wanting to move around more, but he knows he doesn't have any room. So when he came out, it's weird to see him on like that, and then he comes out on the big stage, and he just eats up the whole stage. And the staging was different, though. I like how he stayed in the middle rather than going side to side. Like if he went far to to stage right, he would run into all of Martin's keyboards. He instead, you know, he was out on the catwalk or behind him in the screens. And I thought that was a little different. Maybe that's a way to space him, to keep him, to take up space, but he doesn't run out of steam, you know? I don't know. I was wondering about that. Like, make it look like he's moving around more, but he's kind of staying in a certain area. I don't know. I don't know how he does what he does, especially as he's getting a little older. Sound, his voice, everything. Martin sounded it's the best he's ever sounded. I can't believe he's, you know, in his 60s. There's no sign of age almost with him. I mean, he's obviously looking older, but geez. Did you roll your eyes at all? Did anything go, oh, man?
No, I kind of – when I went through and I was listening, you know, obviously I didn't know the set list before. It was a tour opener. So, you know, everything counts. You know, I kind of – I think I've heard it so many times live and that sort of thing. And I feel like they kind of throw that in there, the fan service a little bit. But, overall, you know, I was – just happy to see them again, to be completely honest. It's been some years.
Yeah, that's
now,
how I so. Was.
Yeah, so whatever they wanted to throw my way, I didn't have a problem with it. I was really kind of thinking before that, just going in, maybe, I don't know if you thought the same thing, but I was trying to visualize, like, without Fletch there, were they going to put, like, his equipment up, like, on the, you know, I guess it would be stage left, or not, right. Just kind of leave that open? I didn't know. That's my thoughts rocking into it.
I totally thought that. I was trying to think how they were going to acknowledge him not being there. And I think what they did was perfect. How did you feel, you know, during World in My Eyes when they threw his – obviously fans know that was generally when asked what's your favorite – song, he would reply with that one. So it's kind of well known that was his favorite song. So perfect song for them to do. But were you disappointed with it, or were you kind of looking, or was, like, for me, I thought it was a perfect, it wasn't a funeral. It was just, they just honored him and left it at that. Did you want more or were you cool with it?
No, I thought it was, I thought it was good. I thought it was a perfect kind of way to acknowledge it. I think his visual, his seeing his face up there was a little surreal. Just knowing he wasn't there on the stage, obviously, but you know, that song always, every time I play that at any time on, you know, live, I love it. Cause it's,
yeah,
I always harken back to the first time I pop in Violator, press play, and then that's the song. And then you hear the opening, you know, riff, and you're like, it just takes me back to that moment, you know, when I first listened to it.
Same. Like, I couldn't believe what I was listening to. It was so, like, whoa. Yeah, no, I was curious what they were going to do. And afterwards, talking to a couple different people, it was generally liked, but I did have a few people go, I wish they would have done more. And I was like, what more could they do? I thought that was a perfect way to acknowledge it. So, yeah, like the idea of them having like his space up there, you know, I don't know. I was just wondering, like you know, would they do something? And I think whatever collective came together to make that decision, I think they did it perfect. I will say though, I got a little choked up when his face popped up and everything, but when he closed his eyes, you know, and I was just like, you know, with him passing and his eyes closed, and I thought that was an interesting choice. I don't think it was bad or poor taste, anything like that. And it was cool how it was moving and everything. But I just noted, like, when the second time I saw it, the eyes thing didn't really jump out at me. But I remember just going, oh, man, you know, it's like he's gone. His eyes are closed. He's gone. And I don't know if that was the intent, but that's how I. Yeah, but it was interesting I keep saying interesting. I need to stop saying that. But in Sacramento, Dave said, hey, this is for our friend Andy Fletcher. But he didn't say that in San Jose, which was I guess he doesn't need to, but he acknowledged it on the first one. So I was glad I was there for that. If we had to go back to a song I kind of rolled my eyes at, I don't want to say I rolled my eyes, but I'm a little tired of the Playing the Angel tracks. And I think they could have, it's fun for them, but I think they could have switched some around. But I'm not bitching about the set list, because it was, when you're there and it's going, it's so much fun. And everything they've been through, I don't care. I just don't care. And they, even the versions of the songs were the same as the last tour. The intros, everything, like on Everything Counts and Wrong, Walking in My Shoes. I'm sure it was the same version of It's No Good and some of the other songs they play. But I just don't care, because they're here and they seem fired up and it was good. Was there a song you were kind of hoping they'd play that wasn't played?
I think it's just a personal thing for me, but I always hope they play like that Halo Gold Frap type of version.
Because
I missed that on the last tour.
On the Delta Machine tour.
Yeah. I guess it was a couple tours ago now. But I always, in the back of my mind, I'm always hoping for that again. I just like Halo Live, you know, from, you know, when you listen to it live, it just has that. Any version of it live is great. But I think any fan in general, when you look at the set list, there's always some songs you say, well, I would have picked this one instead, or picked that one. Or, you know, you start pulling back Black Celebration tracks, Music for the Masses. You start going back, you know, and there's some that I would switch out. But ultimately, you know, I'm just floored by what they did play. And I was just glad to be there.
Yeah. And they, a thing that bothered me on the last tour was I felt like Christian Eigner overplayed. And I don't know if he just was – I saw him way late. They'd already played hundreds of shows, so maybe he's just so bored. And he was just doing a million little fills. But I remember during Enjoy the Silence, he kept doing all these fills. And I was like, ah, come on, you're taking me out of the song here. And definitely wasn't doing that this time. Dave seemed to just be having fun. rather than trying to be a character for each song, kind of like he did last tour. And that may change as the tour evolves. And, you know, they got to keep their interest too, doing the same thing all the time. So I get that. But that was, I'm struggling finding things that I didn't like about it, you know. It's just, I think they played that version of A Pain That I'm Used To.
Yeah.
Three tours now.
Yeah.
The remix.
I was going to mention that one specifically too, but yeah, no, you're right on that one.
And I could live without John the Revelator. Precious, I'm fine if they keep in. I'd rather it not be there, but, you know, if they're going to pull a song from Playing the Angel, that's not pull, but play. That's fine. But, you know, I was kind of hoping they would sneak in, you know, something. But you know, they're a band kind of – they have to play certain songs. They can't get out of it. They don't have much room to change much. And I sound like I'm defending them, and I would love if they did nothing. I wouldn't even care if they didn't play Personal Jesus, Walking in My Shoes. They could drop all that for, like, many songs. But I think, you know, they take pride in putting on these big shows and giving – people who they want, and they have to please a broad base of fans. So I think they give us this, you know, Sister of Night was for people like us who are diehards. And, you know, and if you listen to Depeche too much, you know, Never Let Me Down Again is going to just be tired, you know, like go listen to some other records a couple months before the tour, you know, give their songs a break. And then maybe the set list won't be as samey. But, you know, it's challenging because the hardcore fans want obscure tracks, and they have probably more casual fans than the diehards. So, you know, they have to find the balance. I wasn't going to say get the balance right. I just can't. But no, they have to, you know, and I don't think a lot of songs of Memento Mori lend themselves to being, none of it's really high energy. So they have to be put in certain spots of the set list to kind of work, because there's nothing like really high energy on it. There's no I Feel Loved, or, you know, it's similar to Exciter, where they had to kind of juggle some of the Exciter tracks in with the other songs and the pacing and flow of the set list. And I thought they did that really, really well these last two tours especially. So that was kind of cool. But yeah, it's kind of hard to describe a show, and as we're talking here, because it's more of a visual thing. But overall, I was just so excited and happy to be there and seeing everyone, hanging with you guys. That was just even made it even better. Should we talk about after the show? We had a pretty unique moment after the show. I don't think there's anything else you want to talk about from the actual tour opener.
One thing I will ask is, what did you think about the visuals in comparison to, like, prior concerts?
I thought they were great. I think they've done some better visuals in the past, but I don't think these were bad. The Everything Counts visuals were interesting. But I liked it. I mean, especially It's No Good. Was that with the donkeys, I think?
Yeah.
I mean, donkeys walking along a beach, you know, it's just as if you were sitting there and they were hanging out. But the way the screens were laid out and how clear, and I mean, I thought it was cool. You know, I did afterwards. I had people saying they didn't like them. Like, oh, it's kind of a letdown. But I thought they made a perfect Memento Mori kind of ethic or vibe or aesthetic, whatever term you want to use. I thought it kind of nailed it. What do you think?
I thought the same. I thought the visuals were really good. I thought the contrast and colors switching between the songs were great. The large, you know, M's on there was awesome. You know, part of you, when you just harken back and you think back at prior shows, you do kind of miss some of the, like, the aquarium type of movement and that sort of
thing. Oh,
just yeah, because that, it, it yeah, takes you to those, cool.
those that big those, fish those. From In Your Room on Exciter.
Exactly. It kind of takes you back there. But overall, it was great. I liked it. I have no complaints.
Did you dig the I don't know, I hate keep saying the same words, but I'm just, you know, the mood, the vibe, because they use a lot of reds and purples and a lot of it was dark, but it wasn't dark. They found this perfect, I don't know, formula, recipe of, you know, just creating a mood, but you could still see everybody and they weren't like buried in fog and all that stuff. The lighting was perfect. And the one thing I didn't catch that maybe you may have, Elaine pointed this out, and then I noticed it at the second show. But did you notice on when they played Just Can't Get Enough that the colors and everything in the back had like bright 80s, popular 80s colors, like yellows? And I was like, oh, I don't know if that was intentional, but absolutely, it probably was. But I didn't kind of catch that. And I was like, oh, yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. I can't remember what was on the screens for that song, but.
Yeah, well, that's what I was focused on, because it was those glove hands. You remember that, like, that was kind of going?
I remember that for Everything Counts, but I don't for Just Can't Get Enough.
Oh, Just Can't Get Enough, yeah. No, I was thinking about Everything Counts on that one.
Oh, yeah, that was cool. And I was reading my friend Kristen did that review of San Jose, and she was talking about it because she's familiar with sign language. And there was a couple things where she didn't recognize it, and I guess there's a British version of sign language, and she's trying to find out if there was if it was a British version or if it was nonsense or whatever. I can't quite remember what she said, but it just seemed kind of like, I just thought it was like a circus performer hands, you know, just kind of type thing. But yeah, I like that, the gloves and yeah, just overall, I mean, the opening, I mean, is just striking. The My Cosmos Is Mine. If we kind of jump back to the beginning of the show, they walk out and it's just almost pitch black. And Peter Gordino plays the bass live on that one. So now there's two songs he plays the bass on. He plays the riff on A Pain That I'm Used To. Did you know that was a New Order bass line?
I did not.
Yeah, so Stuart Price that did that remix had produced the previous New Order album, and it was a leftover bass line he had. And I don't remember the story crystal clear, but that bass line that he used on the remix, that was Peter Hook played that, and he used it in the remix. And then that's what floored me when they played the remix live and he played that live on the bass, because I was like, that's a Peter Hook riff, you know, like that's really cool. My two favorite bands kind of, you know, coming together a little bit. So, yeah, the entire story's falling out of my head right now. But yeah, that bass line is from New Order, though, that he reused in the Depeche remix, and then they play that version live. I'm just curious if they had to run that past anybody, or they're like, hey, we paid for the remix, we're doing it, which is, I'm sure, more the case. But yeah, it's kind of funny. So afterwards, the show ends, and we're bumping around and seeing a bunch of people outside, and I wasn't sure where you guys were. We were the people from Depeche Collective were like, hey, we're going to do a big after photo. And we were like, okay. So we went out and we were like circling around, and we were like, I don't know where this is. And then by the time we finally found him, we'd run into you and the crew. And then every place we were talking about going to were just closed, because it was a Thursday night. Like, we were going to go to like two or three spots, and everyone was checking on their phone. It's closed. So we ended up at the restaurant next door, this place called, is it Polanco or Polanco? Something like that.
Yeah, Polanco's, I think.
Polanco's. And that's where we ate before. And they were having an 80s DJ. And a bunch of people just ended up going. And we all just were like, well, let's go. And it was our crew. And then Carrie from New York met up with us. And she was with her friend from Paris, whose name has escaped me. And then Oh, Mike from Seattle was there, and just a bunch of people. We were hanging out. The DJ was playing just all the crazy 80s sing-along big hits, you know, Don't You Want Me and Take On Me. And that was really fun. And then everyone was just kind of dancing and hanging out and drinking. And I don't even know how to start with the Daniel Miller story. I was talking to somebody, and then Mike from Seattle comes over and he's like, dude, Daniel Miller's here. And like, just to explain this to people, this wasn't like an official after party. This wasn't like anything. It was a little restaurant that had a bar, and they cleared out some tables and they brought in a DJ booth, and they don't even have a DJ booth. He just set his stuff on a table. And so it was just this like low key hang. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, Daniel Miller's over at the bar. And I was just like, you're kidding. And I look over there, Daniel Miller's just standing there sipping a drink with a couple friends. And so I was just like, and I don't want to be too dramatic or whatever, but like, I've been wanting to meet him or see him for as long as I can remember. And I was just like, there's, you know, I've met the band. There's no way I'll ever meet Daniel Miller. And there he was, just standing there, just like, whoa. So I went over to him and I said a quick hello. And so they thanked him and for all the amazing music, all that kind of stuff. And then I remember I came over and I got you. You were, I think you were over by the dance floor or whatever. And I was like, dude, Daniel Miller's here. Your face was just like, what? It's just so confused. And I was like, come here. And you looked over and you were like, whoa. And what'd you do? Did you just go over and say hello? I mean, I was there, but I'm so in awe of the moment that I think you guys did a cheers with your drinks or something.
Well, it took us like 5 minutes just to get the courage up, because I'm always that guy. Like, I don't want to go and like, you know, impose or like be that guy. You know, he's trying to have a drink. Yeah.
The only reason I did the first time is because there was about five or six people that recognized him and they went over and shook his hand. And so I just kind of glommed onto them. You know, I jumped behind him and so I just said, you know, I didn't say anything. All I said was thank you. I said, Daniel, thank you. Just thank you. And he goes, oh, that's very kind. Thank you. And I walked away to come tell you, like, Daniel Miller's at the Longhouse. Oh, my God. And then, it took us a while. And we were kind of debating asking him about taking a picture. And we didn't want to be that guy either. And then we were like back and forth. What do you think? And then our friend Tony came over and he was like, if you guys want to do it, I'll take your picture. And we just finally, let's just go up and say hi one more time. And, you know, if it kind of seems natural, then maybe we'll. And I just leaned into him and I'm like, Daniel, if you're comfortable, would you mind taking a photo? And he's like, no, you know, I'm not really comfortable with photos. And I was like, no, no problem. And I started talking to him about Sunroof. And is that when you leaned in to give him to do the cheers with your drinks? I seem to remember you did that, but it's a fog.
Yeah, no, yeah. I just kind of said, hey, man, thanks for everything. I appreciate your music. Cheers. Yeah. And then he was like, oh, man, cheers. You know, that was
cool. I know he gave you a big smile.
Yeah, that was a cool moment.
Yeah, that was cool. And then it was funny. I was talking to him about the Sunroof. He just released a new Sunroof record. And I was like, well, hey, congratulations. You know, we'll let you get back to it. I just want to congratulate you on your new Sunroof album. And then he was like, oh, have you heard it? I was like, yeah. And he goes, have you bought it? I was like, I haven't yet. I have the first one, but I need to get that one still. And he was like, oh, okay. You and that would make three. And I laughed. And then later on when I was thinking about it, because in the moment it wasn't like a starstruck thing, it was just like a surreal standing on a cloud thing. But later on I just was like, oh, that's that classic Daniel Miller kind of silly self-deprecating kind of humor that you hear he has, or he seems to have in interviews. I don't know that directly. I mean, it just kind of that self-deprecating might not even be the right deprecating might not be the right word, but just that kind of silly. I don't know, but it, man, and then we chatted about a couple other things for a little bit, but oh, that was just, I still like, you know, I having met and talked to the band before, I'm more in awe of talking to Daniel Miller. Is that, I don't know why, but it just was like, he created Mute. He signed Depeche Mode. I met the guy who signed Depeche Mode. You know, Yaz, Erasure, Knights Reb, Fad Gadget, just on and on and on and on and on and on. And just kind of floored me. You know, he produced a bunch of their albums up through Black Celebration. He mixed Enjoy the Silence. I mean, just you know, but I did think he appreciated that we didn't bring up like Depeche. We, you know, we're just kind of mentioning him or the normal. I didn't, I just mentioned, I mentioned the new stuff and he seemed to appreciate that. So, yeah, that was surreal. And then what did they call last call at like 1 o'clock or something?
It was pretty early. It was pretty early.
Like, what? Or maybe even 12:45 or something. But yeah, he was there with some friends and then they, you know, a couple fans through the night kind of noticed him come up and said hi. And he was real mellow. Couldn't have been more just, yeah, I just, that was just so surreal. Just like, wow. So any other takeaways from the evening or?
No, I don't think so. I think it was just, you know, good to see everybody again. Got to see people absolutely. I haven't seen in a while. And then just being there, the energy of a first show, it just felt different for me.
Right.
So that was good. That was a good the experience. Whole thing,
I mean, going to a Depeche Mode show is incredible, but a tour opener. And I, you know, I talked a little bit about this just to kind of repeat myself, but in my review for David's blog, but prior to the show, like, I mean, I deleted WhatsApps and didn't look at conversations of friends. I'm like, hey, I don't want to be the guy to tell you, don't spoil it for me. I just was checking out and like, people, I told people like, don't text me stuff. Don't say, just nothing. And like when the album came out, Elaine, a few days earlier, Elaine was listening to it like nonstop. And I'm like, don't even tell me if you like it. Just don't. And, but she did tell me after the concert that the one song, she didn't know they were playing it obviously, but she's like the one song she really wanted me to hear that she knew I would love was Soul With Me, and she was 100% right. And I'm gonna go listen to that song 10 more times tonight. It just reminds me of an old movie. Remember in the old movies, like when they would show all the credits in the beginning?
Yeah.
And would, you know, and the synth sound they picked to start it and ended with seems like one of those old films soundtracks, like cinematic old films. And I love that sound. And then like kind of like, I don't know, it's just indescribable, but that's kind of what it does for me, for whatever, take from that what you will. But while we're just doing a couple quick shows, and I'm not doing a San Jose thing, anything from San Jose jump up besides the amazing ticket upgrade?
Amazing ticket up. That's going to be the most memorable part. I mean,
yeah. And then losing the hard printed ticket.
Yeah, I still think about that. I probably would have even given it to you because I know that you like to collect those things and you'll hold on to them forever too.
Yeah.
That crossed my mind too, but I was like, right when I was about to pull it out of my pocket was empty, but I'm like,
it was funny. We weren't sitting together, but when we were walking out trying to find the where they were going to take the photo, you were standing right there and you had a mountain of shirts. I think you had some for different friends you grabbed stuff for. And then you're like, oh, I lost it. You know, we ran into you and you're like, oh, I lost the ticket. And so we were shaking out. My kids were with us shaking out shirts and sweatshirts. They were like, oh, yeah. Did you go back in? You'd go, I think I'm going to go look for it.
I started that way, but then I remember like I was super far in. I went like underneath through like a thumb back bar lounge just to get out.
So
it just felt like it was going to be a lot.
Oh, and then, man.
But so I just kind of turned around and met up with everyone after there.
I know. You know, I'm looking at the clock and it's 7:30, and I just know that the Depeche show in L.A. is starting right now, and I'm just having like, oh, man, I wish I was there. Normally I go to L.A., but these ticket prices, I had to pick less shows and get better seats at less shows than, you know, I mean, we got good seats for when they're back here in Northern California in December. But you guys are going to L.A. in December in those shows, right? You're going to San Francisco and L.A. at the end of the year here?
End of the year. It was originally going to be we picked the L.A. show specifically on that Friday because it was supposed to be the last show. And then three or four shows got announced right after. I'm like, well, I guess we're going to the second to the last show. Yeah. At least on the American leg, you know,
yeah.
On that side of it. But it's fine. Going on a show on a Friday is not a bad thing.
No. And who knows, you know, if they're playing a few nights that, you know, that might be the show where they mix it up the most. You know, so yeah, I mean, they did. There was a, did you see? I thought this was interesting. So, before the tour opener, and I have to give a shout out to the crew at the Classic Depeche Mode Photos Facebook group because they had a, apparently they couldn't rehearse at the Golden One Center in Sacramento because of the March Madness, they had a basketball game. So I don't know if it was March Madness, but there was a basketball game. And so they rehearsed in Oakland. And did you see those photos Anton Corbin posted? It looked like Sacramento, but Dave Gahn was wearing like a black T-shirt. He wasn't dressed in his concert outfit.
No, I missed that.
Yeah, so they made some photos, and I was just like, oh, that must have been from like dress rehearsal earlier in the day. Like apparently it was the day before, maybe a couple days before – they had to set up, so I'm assuming it's the Oakland Arena Coliseum. You know, I always say Coliseum because it's the general area, but maybe it was in the Oakland Arena, but it happened in somewhere in Oakland. Who knows? There could have been some giant warehouse they rented to do the tour opener, but maybe it was the Oakland Arena. But yeah, they did a run through, and there was another song in the listed in the encore. There was a song. Well, we're already so spoilery, but they were going to do Condemnation after Waiting for the Night to Fall.
Oh, wow.
And it was blacked out. So, you know, that song's going to pop up at some point. Sorry, spoiler, but it's out. I feel bad. Maybe I'll edit that out. But the photo of that rehearsal set list is out there. So bummer they didn't do it. I know that song's kind of a mixed song for people, but it's amazing live. Never understood people who didn't like that one, but it was too gospel-y at the time, I think. But I always loved that one. So, but Dave's daughter hinted that they were playing that one early on in an interview she did. So something about that, I can't remember. It's so funny. I don't know if you're like me, like you're kind of consuming so much right now between interviews and performances and that your mind is just like, I know I read that. Like, so Sunday night, we're laying on the couch and we are watching the performance they do in France. And they did an interview and then they played four songs. And during the interview, and I took a photo of it and I texted it to Hector, was Carrie's friend from Paris who was hanging out with us at the after party. She was with us all night. She was super nice. She was so nice to talk to. And we were comparing, you know, shows in America versus shows in France. And when the interviewer is talking, she's just right there behind him, over the shoulder. You can see it clear as day. And I was just like, only in Depeche Mode where all that happened. I was just so floored. Like, I was like, wow. I sent the picture to Carrie, and she was just like, the one that I texted you, and I texted Carrie. And Carrie was like, I knew she went, but wow. I feel so bad. I forget her name, but I'll have to shout her out on the on Instagram, because that was just – I found her on Instagram from Carrie's she tagged her on something. I was like, oh, I'm going to go follow her. But that small world, it's weird how those things happen. So, well, I don't know if we've done any justice to describe the tour opener, but it's fun to think back on it. It just kind of surreal that we attended one. It was, you know, no spoilers, nothing. Just, oh.
That's yeah, that was really the first time going in and being surprised, you know, every song, because you just didn't know what was going to be played. I mean, if you would have, you probably could have figured some of it out with the pre-warm-up show that they did, but I kind of stayed away from that one, too. I stayed away from that one specifically because I wanted to be surprised.
Well, you know they're going to play certain songs. They're just not going to, they're just going to play them. So, but you know what's funny is all the songs that people grunt when they play on the set list, I Feel You, which I get, and other ones, Just Can't Get Enough, of course, people just, oh, why are they doing that? Like, I don't know if it's in other parts of the world, but here, when they play those songs, people, like, when they started I Feel You, my section went insane. And I saw, like, a woman walking to her seat wearing an I Feel You shirt. And we're so sick of it being in the set list. But if you don't talk about them every day or think about them every day or listen to them every day, you know, that you're not, or you don't follow every set list, like they're not sick of it and they go insane for it. And like, did your section go crazy for Just Can't Get Enough? I mean, mine went nuts both nights.
Yeah, Just Can't Get Enough got a big rise. I say I Feel You did too, actually. And then,
yeah, I know. People go insane for that one.
Yeah, yeah. No, you know, obviously Enjoy the Silence and some of those ones got a big rise. Yeah. But you're right. Kind of the same type of energy was going on.
And people went crazy for John the Revelator. And I'm like, I'd just be so happy if they never played that song again. Don't hate it. Just like... It should have only been played on one tour.
I'm probably the same boat.
You know, they could have played nothing from Music for the Masses in its place, and people would have lost their minds.
Yeah.
But you know, they have a big crowd to please, and I again sound like an apologist for them, and I'm not. I just understand. that's what they got to do. So, anyway, I got to shut up, and I'm getting excited. I'm bummed you're not going to Vegas, but we're leaving in the morning, or you know, it's about an 8-hour drive, and you know, then I think there's a collective meetup tomorrow night, so. Gonna hopefully see a bunch of people, and yeah, I'll throw some stuff on the Breathing and Fume stories, and yeah. What's the next show for you? I know it's in the fall when they get back here.
Yeah, I think it's the Chase Center one, the San Francisco one would be the next one.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, same. I'm not going. You know, it's so weird. I skipped LA last year, and this is the first tour since Songs of Faith and Devotion that I didn't go to LA for Depeche. So, oh, actually I didn't on the Exciter tour because they played 4 or 5 Northern California shows. I can't remember. Maybe not that many, but I know they played at least 4. And was it 3? Anyway, but it's just weird not to go to LA for that to go see them. So I might end up buying a ticket and going.
There's still time.
Yeah. I mean, that'll be something I'll decide like around then. I haven't bought any, but I'm sure. How many nights are they playing LA? 4? I forget.
I think you're right. I think it is 4.
There's no
different shot locations around there, but
yeah, tickets always pop up or friends can't go. I feel horrible. My friend Amanda just posted on Facebook, and she's a super fan. I mean, she goes to so many shows that she tested positive for COVID, and she can't go to tonight. She's in LA to go to the show, and
oh no,
she can't go, and she can't go to Vegas. So feel better, Amanda, if you happen to hear this.
What a bummer.
So anyway, let's wrap this up. Thanks for joining me. This was a lot of fun. Hopefully you didn't mind yapping away about the shows too much.
Yeah, no, it feels like we're just on the phone talking, so that was good.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, people can catch us. We play records.
We play records, mod 80s.
Mod 80s disco. Let's throw in a little plug. No, well, this month, so we were lucky enough to meet some friends that have this night called Mod 80s Disco in Oakland. Javi from Los Angeles and Raquel here in Oakland area. And they just became, yeah, it was kind of cool. Now they have a new night in San Francisco and they rotate us through. So sometimes you can catch Hector and I together. This month, we're not playing. They're playing the night before in Oakland and I'm playing the next night in San Francisco. So if you're listening to this, I'll throw the info in the Breathing and Fumes stories. So if you're local, you can come say hi. And we play, what do we play at those nights? Synth pop, 80s new wave.
Pretty much. I have a feeling this time around there's going to be a lot of Depeche Mode heavy, some of the new stuff, kind of throw that in at the beginning of the night.
You know, T-Bone's going to drop his new remix for Ghost again.
Yeah, no, that was solid. I had a lot of energy to that one. So
yeah.
That was good.
I like what he did with that. I like the synth choices, layering it behind the vocals. And now we're talking to inside, so I'll shut up. He put it out on his social media. You can see a little video of his remix, T-Bones. But anyway, all right, well, let's wrap this up. And thanks so much for joining me. And I'm sure I'll be texting you some dumb thing. I'm just waiting. While we're sitting here, I'm just waiting, like, what? Maybe they'll do something a little different tonight. You know, I wouldn't bet money on it. I think they're just doing these run of shows just to get back into Depeche world and dealing without just Andy and all the changes. But I am so thrilled for them that the album, and more specifically Ghost Again, is getting such a huge response that I'm sure it's just really got them excited to hit the road. So that'll be pretty cool. So, okay, my man. Well, thanks so much for joining me.
Well, there you go. Have a safe trip to Vegas. I'll be watching your stories. So.
Well, that's it for episode 16 of Breathing in Fumes. Thanks for joining me, Hector. It's always fun to chat with you and get your insights. And I'm sure that won't be the last of you joining me here on Breathing in Fumes. For more information on the podcast, just follow me on social media. I'm working on a new website right now. I thought it'd be done by this episode, but I'm not quite there yet. But just look for me at Breathe In Fumes on Instagram and Facebook. I have Twitter, but I've just haven't been active there lately. So Instagram's kind of my favorite. So at Breathe In Fumes, and I'll get you the website info when I have it. Thanks everyone for listening, and hope I didn't spoil anything for you with our conversation here. So don't get mad, I told you. Anyway, thanks for listening and take care.